Radio. It is time again for Tech Plus. A very big hello to you and welcome. It's our roundup of this week's biggest tech stories. We do it in 60 minutes, also play you some great tunes. As always, my name's Ion and I'm joined by Kane, who always offers us his expert opinion, and it's always nice to hear what he has to say. A lot of hot topics again this week. Kane, how was your week?
My week was good. I got a little bit sick over the weekend, but back in action, fully running. We actually, that Burgwind yesterday, how was that?
That was strange, eh? It's very, very strange for this time of year, I think.
I know. I mean, it's been a while since we've had a Burgwind like that. And yeah. Now, but it's always good to have one. I actually prefer it. It's better than being freezing cold, I must say.
Yeah, it looks like the cold is still coming, eh?
Absolutely. But it's been a very eventful week in tech. We've got some good topics to talk about. But I think the biggest topic and what's on all of our minds right now is, you know, the 18th of May passed, Disney Plus. Tell me about it.
Wow. Kane, listen, I have a friend and he said to me last night, listen, you have to go and check out the library of the new Disney Plus. So obviously I was still a bit skeptical, so I said to him, let me try. Okay, so I tried to log in, but you can't see the library and what it has to offer without entering your card details first. So I wasn't ready to commit at that stage and to put in any card details. So he said, hey, no man, log into my account. And that was very nice of him. So I logged into his account to just scroll through the library of what Disney Plus has to offer. And man, I got lost in there because it was so good. There's so much to offer, and a lot of old favorites, you know, Desperate Housewives, The Golden Girls, Ugly Betty, Brothers and Sisters, even Grey's Anatomy. All the big old favorites are in that library. So I was very, very impressed, because these were shows that we lost over the course of the last couple of years on Netflix due to licensing deals. Even Revenge is on there. Listen, I can't even mention it to you. I got the PDF of the content on the new Disney Plus for South Africa, and that document alone is 42 pages of movies and and in small typing. So that just tells you how much there is on offer there. But amazing movies. If you're a Star Trek fan, all the movies, Home Alone, all the old favorites, and then the high quality newer movies. So I was so impressed, of course, and I said to my friend, listen, okay, I'm going to sign out of your account now, but as soon as I sign out, I'm going to sign in and create my own one. And so I did, and I was up all night, almost all night, eh? I was overdoing it, man. But it was just so, so nice. And then I actually, I don't know if I made a quick decision there without thinking it through, but I think I did the right thing, and I actually cancelled my Netflix subscription because burn, man. So
you're part of the statistic now.
I had to do that because I was thinking to myself, so many nights when I actually have a chance to watch TV, I find myself scrolling through Netflix, not finding anything, and then I end up watching some of the stuff I've watched before, you know, stick to what you know and the familiar stuff. And I was like, no, you know, this is, it's not worth it. So I cancelled it for now, because obviously I finished watching Ozark and all that stuff I wanted to see. So there's nothing really on there now for me, left for me. So I cancelled my subscription. I've got a week left that I paid for, which I'll just finish up what I wanted to watch on Netflix. And then it's all Disney Plus for me, man.
Yeah, it's very true, eh? And I went onto Disney Plus as well yesterday. I thought, you know, I'm not even going to look what's behind the veil. Yeah, I'm just going to take the subscription, because why not? You know, new streaming service. And you know what the first thing I noticed is, you know, when you go to Netflix and you like look around, you're like, man, you know, what am I going to watch?
Yeah.
Is there anything new? What used to happen for me a lot on Netflix is I'd get to Netflix, look around, I would find one thing that I knew I'd probably be interested in watching. It was either new or it was new episodes for it, and I was like, okay, I guess we're watching that. But upon landing on Disney Plus, the first thing I realized is, okay, maybe I should watch this. Okay, then after I watch that, I think I'm going to take a look at this. And then I was like, but there's also that. And that's refreshing, right?
Yeah.
And that's what actually should be there for Netflix right now.
Yeah.
Because of their content shortfalls and their bottlenecks, they have no content. So what should be the experience going on to Netflix doesn't exist anymore. And then you have someone like Disney Plus, who obviously has a catalog of content which we've never before had access to.
Exactly.
Like, I didn't know where you could stream something like Black Panther, for example, or any of the Marvel studio-based shows. You know, where do you even watch something like that? I mean, streaming something like Avengers Endgame, that's usually something where you have to go either, you know, buy it off of the app, Android movie store, or something like that. You know, the new Loki TV show as well, the new Moon Knight TV show as well, any of the old Avengers, you know, that's all the kind of shows that are there. But what does that mean for Netflix? Well, a survey shows that Netflix is losing more long-term subscribers. So users subscribed to Netflix for more than 3 years represent 13% of the total cancellations, which is bad.
Mm.
It's very bad. It's almost your top tier, most high-valued, you know, long-term customers that are all kind of exiting, and you want them to stay the longest. So more long-term subscribers are canceling their subscriptions, according to a report by The Information. Survey data viewed by the outlet revealed that subscribers who had been with the service for more than 3 years accounted for that 13% of cancellations. The Information says it got its data from Antenna, an analytics firm that gathered data from 5 million Americans who shared their streaming subscriptions annually. The data showed that overall cancellations hit 3.6 million people last quarter, an increase from the 2.5 million cancellations in the past five quarters. Also, as the number of cancellations overall has grown, The Information reports that new users are accounting for a smaller share of them, another indicator that Netflix is struggling to retain users for longer periods of time. In the second quarter of 2021, people surveyed who subscribed to the platform for less than 1 year made up 70% of the cancellations, while long-term subscribers accounted for 6%. 60% of cancellations were made by newer subscribers last quarter, which means people are like, okay, let's try Netflix. Hell no, I'm out of here. And they don't, and there's no penetration. There's no long-term penetration. And that's a big problem for Netflix, because when you're a normal person and you hear about Netflix losing subscribers, what is the first thing you think? Should I also cancel my subscription?
Yeah.
That's your first consideration. You've already canceled your subscription. There are other people that are already canceling their subscriptions. I mean, even The Verge featured a few articles about Netflix's conundrum, and even they have colleagues that are also unsubscribing from Netflix. So that's a huge problem. Huge problem. One of the things that they also said, actually the editor, the news editor of The Verge, Richard Lawyer, pointed out that after all the rate hikes over the years, Netflix's price has risen out of default subscription range and is easily out of forget I even had it range when compared to cheaper ad-supported plans for other services like Hulu, which costs like $7. That's crazy, right? It's crazy. Netflix is in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, no, definitely. And also, like you said, you know, people who have been subscribed for 3 years or more, that's me, because I was subscribed for about 3 years. And you log into something like Disney Plus and you discover this whole new world, and you just forget about Netflix, and the next thing you do is cancel, especially if you, you know, watching your budget and all that kind of stuff. So that's exactly what I did last night. And the funny thing is, Kane, I actually felt bad for canceling my subscription.
I did a quick calculation to see how much we've paid to Netflix over the last 3 years. If you had one subscription and you paid the full subscription price, you've given Netflix about 5,400 Rand over the last 3 years.
Wow. You know why I think I felt sorry or bad for cancelling my subscription is because of the news I saw this week as well, that Netflix, they were laying off 150 staff to kind of make up for their 200,000 subscriber loss. So I think that's kind of the element that got to me, is 150 people losing their jobs, you know, because it's going so bad.
Absolutely. No, they have to start considering, you know, their expenses and stuff like that, because you just don't know how far down the tunnel you're going to go in terms of subscriber loss, you know. So they have to make the provisions now to you know, to make sure their staff, they have to let go of staff, and that staff acquisition probably is somewhat tied to a growth strategy, right? Based on the principle of growth annually, they knew they needed X amount of new staff, but because growth diminished, new staff wasn't required, and they have to maintain their profit margin.
Yeah.
And so they let them go, and that's pretty sad, you know.
Very
and it
sad.
Shows that shows the struggle right now. I mean, we were just talking about DStv, and now it's like Netflix is sinking.
No, listen, I never saw that coming. I saw DStv sinking, but I see DStv already. They already made plans because they're merging with Disney Plus. They've also added Disney Plus to their decoder now. So when you push that menu button, you can see Netflix, YouTube, and Disney Plus, and they're offering you R49 discount if you're a DStv subscriber and you're signing up with Disney Plus. They're getting clever now, eh?
No, they are. They are getting clever. And talking of clever, have you heard what Elon Musk tweeted to the SEC?
No.
So this is where it gets really interesting. So Elon Musk has called on the SEC to investigate Twitter's user numbers. Right, that was what he's done. So obviously, does Elon Musk want to buy Twitter or not? Right, that's the ultimate question. And right now, this morning, the company's prospective new owner insisted in a tweet, of course, that the $44 billion deal he agreed to cannot move forward until he sees the proof he's looking for about active user numbers, with needling current Twitter CEO and texting former CEO Jack Dorsey having failed to hit the spot. Musk seemingly jokingly pulled in another recurring character from his 24/7 revolving circus by tweeting the US Securities and Exchange Commission, asking them to investigate. The tweet goes, Twitter claims that more than 95% of daily active users are real, unique humans. Does anyone else have that experience? And then he made it a poll, and there were two possible options. One is two laughing faces, and the other is who, me, with an exclamation mark and a question mark. That has already got 430,000 votes in the 47 minutes it was live. And so obviously what the thing is Elon Musk is now unsure whether or not Twitter's daily active users are indeed what they've been specified as. But joke or not, Twitter has had troubles with accurate metrics and recently admitted it had been overcounting daily users for years. Twitter's CEO stands by the estimates about the amount of bot activity included in its daily active users. However, now that puts the CEO in a standoff that Musk might be using to lower his price for the company or exit the deal altogether.
Okay, so that's what's delaying it. That's why he didn't actually go through with it yet. He wants to see if these people are actually real and not just bots, robots.
And the bot activity on Twitter is a real problem. I'm not gonna subtract from that at all.
Mm.
In actuality, remember when the U.S. elections were taking place?
Yeah.
Well, if you went and looked, you know, on very Republican-heavy Twitter conversations or very Democratic-heavy Twitter conversations, and you went and had a look at the actual quality and quantitative aspects of those conversations, and you start analyzing the people taking part in those conversations, there are some strange occurrences which are hard to fully understand, such as, you know, you'll see someone advocate something good about the upcoming election and pushing people to vote for, you know, the Republican side. And then you go look at his profile and he looks like a normal person, but you can find another person who also looks like a real person tweet the exact same message or something extremely similar. So there is like bot armies and things like that that are on Twitter and are a real problem. And they're built to look like real people, act like real people, talk like real people, tweet like real people. But you don't know if they're real or not. And if it is way more out of proportion than what we understand, meaning it's way worse than it looks, then Elon would have a problem with it because he's spending huge amounts of money for something that looks real but isn't. And obviously people do use Twitter legitimately and things like that, but bots are a problem.
And now I understand why there's this delay in actually going through with that transaction. Kane, what have you got for us when we come back?
When we come back, we're taking a look at a few interesting stories. The first one is Google's Russian branch is planning to file for bankruptcy because of something Russia did to Google's bank account in Russia. We're taking a look at Honda's first electric SUV to be sold in the USA. And we're taking a look at Pick and Pay, who has partnered with Take a Lot for a Checkers 60-60 competitor. And it sounds really, it's going to compete, that's for sure. So that's what we're going to take a look at.
That's all we need. More options and more competition. In the end, the consumer wins, right?
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Cool. And we're back on Tech Plus. If you just joined us, a big hello to you and welcome. We are discussing this week's biggest tech stories and joined, as always, by Kane. Kane, you want to start with the Google Russian branch who plans to file for bankruptcy. And, you know, funny enough, I just saw a couple of days ago that McDonald's will be pulling out of Russia, saying it's no longer a viable business. That's quite a big deal.
It is a very big deal. It is a very big deal. And they've obviously been in Russia for about 30 years, I believe.
Yeah. And so, now just want to close completely.
And it's not the first, you know, it's not the first company to pull a stunt like this based on trying to exit Russia with this Ukraine issue. But Russia's latest stunt has been the Russian authorities have seized Google's bank accounts in the country. Remember, a while ago, Google actually banned certain ads ads at all from any Russian-owned media. And that includes their YouTube ad network. And they ended up actually banning YouTube, Russian YouTube accounts, government-backed Russian YouTube accounts. They also banned the ads of the Google ad network as well on any Russian sites. And now Russia's obviously retaliated and seized Google's bank account. So Google's Russian subsidiary will file for bankruptcy, according to a report from Reuters, with the company stating it can no longer keep that branch. The Russian branch reported making 134.3 billion rubles, or about 2.08 billion USD in Russia in 2021, and employed over 100 workers. The Russian authorities' seizure of Google's Russian bank account has made it unobtainable for our Russian office to function, including employing and paying Russian-based employees, paying suppliers and vendors, and meeting other financial obligations, a Google spokesperson said in a statement to The Verge. Google Russia has published a notice of its intention to file for bankruptcy. So what happened was Russian authorities seized Google's bank account. Google has an existing business in Russia with employees and with financial obligations. They, of course, were no longer able to meet those financial obligations and responsibilities. Therefore, the only course of action is to file for bankruptcy for their Russian branch. And that's exactly what they're doing. So that's pretty intense. I mean, that's pretty aggressive on Russia's front, you know, to just seize the bank account and basically take away all their money. And they, as you saw, they had $2 billion revenue in Russia in 2021. That money's gone.
Wow.
Google's had to write that money off.
Sure. That's quite drastic, eh?
Yeah. And what do? You know, you're from the country, you know what I mean? So there's not much you can do other than potentially sue But there's no, I don't know what the political complications are now with the Ukraine issue, and why would Google be fighting to maintain their business in Russia? It could be bad PR. So yeah, they just decide, okay, let's Google doesn't exist in Russia anymore.
Wow, okay, well, that's very, very interesting. But I can't say I'm really, really, really surprised. Next thing, we're talking about the electric vehicles nowadays, the EVs. Honda, you said Honda is teasing an upcoming electric SUV.
Yes, so we were seeing obviously all these different car companies now trying to shift to EVs, and this is Honda's SUV shift to EVs, and the Prologue is the name of Honda's new electric SUV, and it goes on sale in 2024. So Honda released a teaser image of the upcoming 2024 Prologue electric SUV, the company's first battery electric vehicle to be sold in the US. The company also touted its hybrid vehicles as a way to address questions that it has been slow to roll out an EV strategy as compared to its rivals. The Prologue will be the first of two vehicles that Honda is co-developing with General Motors using the US automaker's Ultium battery packs. The other vehicle will carry the Acura nameplate and will also be developed jointly with GM. But the company hasn't revealed any new information about it at the time. The Prologue, which will go in sale in 2024, also marks the beginning of a wave of 30 hybrid battery electric and fuel cell vehicles that Honda says it will release by 2030. And it's important to you know, pat these companies on the back for actually coming to the table and developing, you know, EV strategies, even though for them you either have a strategy for EVs or you get left behind. So it's not necessarily like Honda's main objective might be EVs. They would have had EVs sooner than anyone else if it was their top priority. But I think this is more of a case of don't get left in the dust. Make sure you're transitioning and shifting with the market, and this is going to be Honda's shift. And the reason it's important for many car manufacturers to shift to EVs is because the general support for the recharging of these electric vehicles is where the real challenge is, especially in South Africa when we're talking about a shift to EVs, because South Africa is very vast. Like, the distance between two reasonably sized towns can be quite large. So if you've got a range of 300 kilometers and there's one refueling station in George and one refueling station in Cape Town, and you have a 350 kilometer range, you are not gonna make it to Cape Town. It's not gonna happen, you know? And the more electric vehicle manufacturers, or at least the more vehicle manufacturers that are creating electric vehicles, the more support there will be for the rechargeability, but also initiatives by someone like Tesla, which is actually what we're going to be taking a look at as well, is now with Tesla, non-Tesla electric vehicles can use its superchargers in the UK, Spain, Sweden, and Austria. So not just Teslas can use some of the Tesla electric vehicle recharging substations, right? Mm. Any car can use Tesla's recharging stations. Now, if all vehicle manufacturers have the same mentality that a Tesla can use a Honda recharge station, a Honda can use a Tesla, then that idea of network rechargeable support becomes a lot more apparent, right? That's what we need if we're going to really shift to EVs, especially in somewhere like South Africa. Or the deficit is vehicles have to have a further range, and that puts technological pressure on the development of EVs, and that's not the ideal way to go.
Very interesting, Kane. Just before our next music break, you mentioned Pick and Pay partnering with Takealot.
This is a huge partnership. It marks the start of what I think is going to be a very healthy competition in South Africa for these types of solutions. So Pick and Pay and NASPA's owned Takealot Group have signed a to buy Pick and Pay food, groceries, and liquor on a new platform on Takealot's Mr. D app. Pick and Pay will bring its, and this is a statement that they made together, Pick and Pay will bring its tremendous expertise in running fresh food and grocery, its nationwide store network, and its leading smart shopper loyalty program. The Takealot Group will bring its proven ability to satisfy online, its technical expertise, and its unrivaled delivery network, the company said in a joint statement on Tuesday. The companies explained that under the agreement, when a customer opens the Mr. D app, they will be offered a choice to either A, buy groceries, or B, buy food from restaurants. By clicking on A, buy groceries, customers will enter a dedicated Pick and Pay food and grocery experience. Customers will be able to browse and select the items they want to buy and conveniently create their baskets. Once the order is submitted and paid, Pick and Pay will pick and pack the order from the closest Pick and Pay store. It will then be collected by a member of the Takealot delivery fleet and delivered to the customer. The Pick and Pay Smart Shopper Loyalty Program will be embedded in the Mr. D app, so that customers will be able to earn points when buying Pick and Pay groceries on the Mr. D app. It's kind of where two big companies that have had independent success are joining together to create competition for something like ShopRite's group, Checkers 6060.
Nice. So let's go for a music break and then we wrap it up here on Tech Plus for today. And we're back with Tech Plus. It's Ion with you and also Kane wrapping up this week's biggest tech stories. Kane, very, very interesting story about YouTube also adding a very nice new feature.
Right, so let's put ourselves into YouTube shoes for a second, right? You're a big long-form video platform who is now being competed with by the likes of short form video TikTok, right? And that's a losing battle, because why watch a 35 minute video when you can watch a 1 minute video and get the same information? Now, obviously that's not realistic, but that's a consideration that YouTube has to keep in mind when they're thinking about the next 5 years of their existence. They can't be outmatched by someone like TikTok. So what they've developed is a solution to help them maintain a shorter form experience, even if the video is long form. And the way they do that is YouTube now highlights the most replayed parts of videos to let you skip the boring parts. What that means is you'll be able to identify most popular parts of a video from a graph that appears behind its progress bar, says YouTube. If the graph is high, then that part of the video has been replayed often. You can use the graph to quickly find and watch those moments. It's pretty simple, but it's interesting to think how this might split the attention of viewers, or indeed steer the work of creators, giving them yet another signal to identify exactly what viewers want to see, an aspect of the platform that some YouTubers say creates unwanted pressure. The company is announcing the feature as part of a package of updates, some new, some not, that essentially work to splice up longer videos into more manageable and accessible chunks. These include a new way to loop parts of videos that launched last year but hadn't formally been announced, and an upcoming test for premium subscribers that will let users seek to the exact moment in a video that you want to watch. Very interesting, eh? It's an interesting strategy to counteract TikTok's shorter form, but still keep YouTube's YouTube, what YouTube has been made for, which is longer form video.
Yeah, very, very interesting. It looks like the shorter it is nowadays, the better. It just shows you people want things quickly, and they want it right now. Moving on to the next story, Kane. Uber.
So, Uber has this is funny because I thought about it yesterday, right? I think it was like 2 days ago or something. I ordered some takeaway food and I paid online, right, before the food had even got there. And I thought to myself, as I was collecting this food from this person, I thought, you know, it's not even necessary that I'm here taking this food from you. I mean, you could have left it at my door and I could have opened it and taken it just the same. The food has been paid for. You know what I mean? The only problem for me is maybe the guy dropped off the food 30 minutes ago outside my door and I only see it now. That's what I was just thinking to myself, right?
Yeah.
But it just so happens that Uber has already thought of that, and they've released something that they're testing now in the California area, which is no human contact, which would be like robot food delivery. And this is specifically going to be in California. So the announcements are part of Uber's annual product event, where the ride hail and food delivery company showcases the latest updates to an app, to its app. Uber announced one food delivery service using autonomous cars and a separate pilot using sidewalk robots. Both services are available to Uber Eats users in Santa Monica and West Hollywood in California, and consumers will have the ability to opt out of the programs. The autonomous car pilot is in collaboration with Motional, the self-driving joint venture of Hyundai Motors, and was initially announced in December. It launched on Monday, Uber and Motional said. Uber said the sidewalk robots are provided by Serve Robotics, a Spain cutoff delivery company, Postmates, which Uber acquired in 2020. The vehicle in both services are actively monitored by human operators, Uber said, adding that it will be some time before this technology is operated at scale. Self-driving companies have repeatedly pushed out timelines to provide truly driverless trips at scale, with only a few limited fully autonomous programs available across the US. Uber on Monday also said it was launching a map of electric vehicle charging stations in its driver app, which is cool. We're talking about being able to actually provide lifts to people using an electric vehicle, and the Uber app actually showing you where you can recharge your vehicle and potentially even calculating, you know, multi-trips with different people and including a stop at a electric vehicle recharging station. And then the other one is you've got your AI robots that will deliver food outside your door. So you'll get a knock on your door, you'll go there, there's a robot standing there with your delivery, you say thank you very much, he asks for a tip, you say no tip, sorry, and he goes off on his way.
Yeah, these robots are taking chances, eh? That's funny.
The last piece of news for us for today's show, and I think this is something that's really, really cool. We are on Earth that spins around in the Milky Way, right? We're all part of the Milky Way galaxy. That's that. And then the closest galaxy to us is the Andromeda galaxy. But we are all in the Milky Way galaxy, and everything in our galaxy spins and goes towards the black hole at the center of the galaxy. At least that is what is the proposed theory, right? As far as we can see and as far as astronomers understand. But an international team of astronomers have announced the first image of a supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy. Now we're talking actually being able to see this theory, right? And they've managed to capture this picture of our supermassive black hole at the center of our own galaxy. So this international team of astronomers on Thursday unveiled the first image of a supermassive black hole at the center of our own Milky Way galaxy, a cosmic body known as Sagittarius A. The image, produced by a global team of scientists known as the Event Horizon Telescope Collaboration, is the first direct visual confirmation of the presence of this invisible object and comes 3 years after the very first image of a black hole from a distant galaxy. And this is a quote from Harvard University astronomer Sarah. For decades, we have known about a compact object that is at the heart of our galaxy that is 4 million times more massive than our sun. And they've managed to capture this in photographic form. And there's a lot of videos online about them actually discovering this black hole. And I would advise anyone who's interested in that to go have a look at it, because it is so fascinating how they target a region of our sky and start, you know, zooming in to find the supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy. But to actually reach that supermassive black hole, they have to do quite a number of magnifications where they're actually penetrating through clusters of stars that are in the foreground to have a clear or as clear picture as possible using infrared a clear picture of our black hole at the center of our galaxy. And that is what makes everything spin. It's the gravitational force that keeps our galaxy together. And now we have a picture of it.
It's just amazing to know what's going on out there. I mean, we are running around here like headless chickens on this planet with our little problems. But meanwhile, look what's happening all around us. It's all trivial, isn't it?
Trivial, yet extremely exciting, you know. And we, you remember, no one has managed to get a photo of this object ever in history. And because of our technological advancements, we are able to achieve something to see that accompanies the theory. And that, for me, I think this is very exciting.
Absolutely, Kane. That's it for another week of Tech Plus. Wishing you a wonderful weekend. And then we'll see you again in studio next week. Same time, same place.
Fantastic. Same time, same place. Looking forward to it. I mean, obviously, special thank you to everyone that takes the time to listen, to all of our listeners listening in. It's been absolutely great having another week of our tech show. And we'll see you next week for another one.
And I'll see you next week, Kane. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.